holiday decor to family tradition and even the homemade holiday meal. We're talking about hors d'oeuvres, side dishes, main courses, and even some very decadent desserts. All right here, right now, every Friday on the Morbid Homemakers podcast, now exclusively for download on iTunes. Hello, and thank you so much for tuning in to the Morbid Homemakers podcast. I'm your host, Brian, and welcome to our show. Today, we're talking all about side dishes and desserts just in time for the Thanksgiving table. I want to thank all of my followers on Twitter and on Facebook for giving me ideas to talk about this week. I asked a question earlier this week asking what was your favorite side dishes and desserts, sort of foreshadowing the premise of today's show. And I got so many responses back, and thank you again for all of the feedback. Most of them were typical and usual for the Thanksgiving table, but you know, some were expressing concerns of wanting to introduce a side dish or a dessert to the Thanksgiving table and not getting such a favorable response. So I figured we'd touch base on that and ways to maybe introduce a new side dish or dessert to the Thanksgiving table without stepping on anyone's toes at your gathering. We're also going to talk about my favorite side dishes and desserts that I do every year at my Thanksgiving and the reason behind me having two Thanksgivings. And it actually has something to do with the first thing we're going to talk about, which is introducing new side dishes and desserts to the Thanksgiving table. This is a really hard thing to do because Thanksgiving in this country is a celebration of, you know, it's a historical celebration, you know, celebrating the pilgrims landing on the Mayflower in this country at Plymouth Rock and, you know, having the Indians or whatever think that, well, no, I need to go back to school. But, you know, the reason, something with the pilgrims and groundhogs coming out of the trees and, something about Jesus was born in the manger and then was stuck to a tree. I don't know, something like that. Anyway, Thanksgiving is really important. But obviously I was kidding. So, you know, it's really hard because Thanksgiving is, it's a celebrated holiday. I mean, hardly any stores, more stores are open on Christmas than are open on Thanksgiving, believe it or not. And it's just funny to me to see this because it shows that this is a nationally celebrated holiday. It has a lot of historical meaning behind it. And it really touches base with the traditions that this country, you know, has its roots attached to, obviously. So it's really hard to bring something new to a family tradition. Americans don't like change. That's why we stick with the same president for 8 years. We just don't like change, and it's becoming more and more of a habit. And not that, you know, it's really hard to impose change onto something. And when the highlight in the media is, you know, you see in every store ad, in every commercial promoting Thanksgiving, there's always a turkey. So to say, well, we're going to have Cornish game hens at this Thanksgiving, it would go over like a hooker in church. It's not going to go over at all. And that's why I need to have two Thanksgivings, because I do a traditional Thanksgiving, which this year I'm not hosting. We're actually attending another family member's Thanksgiving, but I will bring desserts. But we're having a second Thanksgiving, which has become sort of our family tradition, where we are thankful for each other, and it's sort of like the first celebration of Thanksgiving, but I call it my social media Thanksgiving, because it gives me an opportunity to try new dishes, take pictures, write reviews on the dishes that I tried, and it lets my followers say, well, if Brian liked it, I'm going to try it. You know, or if this looked really good in his picture, so hopefully mine will turn out just as good. And there's no reason for it. I'm pretty explicitly clear on how to recreate what I do on Facebook and Twitter. Anyway, so if you do all that and you have a favorable response, your people that have attended will say, well, how did you get this? Can I get the recipe? Or hey, can you bring this to next year's Thanksgiving? Or can you make this next year for my Thanksgiving? And that's how you impose the change. You kind of have to ease it in. So if you're responsible for bringing the stuffing on Thanksgiving Day, bring the stuffing. Don't do anything crazy with that. But maybe bring an alternative stuffing. I'm trying one this year with sausage and kale, and I cannot wait to try it. For a work event this year, and it kind of kills two birds with one stone, I'm making a wild mushroom and sausage stuffing. because it is so good. But so many people turn their nose up at things that aren't the norm, especially for a traditional meal. So I'm hoping I will get a favorable response with that. People will ask me for the recipe, which I am going to have recipe cards on hand for that event, and give them out to my coworkers as they ask for the recipe. And hopefully they'll try it at their Thanksgiving gatherings. If you're responsible for bringing a dessert, like the pumpkin pie or the apple pie, again, traditional desserts that are always welcome at the Thanksgiving table, you might want to wait till the next holiday, which is either Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or Christmas, depending on what religion you celebrate or ethnicity you belong to. But this, you can bring festive desserts for the Thanksgiving table as well. I like to make different sorts of rustic apple tarts and rustic stone fruit tarts for from stone fruit that I've preserved or can find still readily available because I live in the middle orchard country around Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, which is just chock full of orchards. If you've ever been here, you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, you can make different sorts of things with those ingredients at your Thanksgiving and or holiday celebration later on in the year. So I'm going to try to make this year for my Thanksgiving a gingerbread cheesecake, something that, you know, gingerbread is commonly used to celebrate Christmas or the holiday time. But, you know, really, Thanksgiving is very much included in that holiday time. It's sort of the same celebration of Christmas. It's that, you know, giving thanks and the whole meaning behind the season, depending on your beliefs. But it all shares a common ground, and it's just basically family, friends, and loved ones, and a gathering for them. And why not celebrate that with excellent food? So bring your apple tart, bring your pumpkin pie, bring your apple pie, whatever you're designated to bring to your Thanksgiving table, and make something new. Now, if you're hosting Thanksgiving, you obviously have all your work cut out for you. Not only are you responsible for bringing the turkey, but you are responsible for creating all of these delicious side dishes. So I figured we'd talk about that. Now, my rule of thumb is, if you come to my house, you're going to eat what I have on the table. And if you don't like it, well, tough crackers, because I don't care. I fix what I want to fix, but I am considerate. Like I said, I am respectful that it is the holiday meal, so I will make that stuff, but it might have different variations in it. Sweet potatoes, there's so many things you can do with that. There's sweet potato casserole, there's sweet potatoes that have been baked, sweet potatoes that have been cut into wedges and roasted, and deep fried for sweet potato fries. You can do sweet potato pie. There's so many things to do with sweet potatoes, and no matter what, it usually always tastes the same. And it's always delicious. If you love sweet potatoes, you know what I'm talking about. Now, sweet potatoes and yams are actually not the same thing. Sweet potatoes are a member of the Morning Glory family, believe it or not, and they're not actually even a potato. Potatoes belong in a different category. So, they are sweet. They are delicious. They come in different colors. You can get them in orange hues, and you can get them in a white hue. Not that there's really much difference in the taste. I've had both of them. I'm sure there's some chemical difference, and that's why one is white and why one is orange. It might be beta carotene that's in it. I'm not sure, but I know that typically a lot of vegetables that have orange color in them are usually high in beta carotene. So anyway, those are things that you can do with the sweet potatoes. Now, this year for my social media Thanksgiving, I am doing a sweet potato casserole dish that's not so high on the sugar intake because, you know, your sugar intake, we're going to really try, a lot of my family is on diet. So what we're going to do this year is we're adding a little bit of brown sugar, but not as much as in your, what I like to call candied sweet potato casserole, because it tastes like candy. We're doing this year something different where it tastes sort of like a dreamsicle. You take a little bit of orange juice, a little bit of vanilla extract, and I saw this on the Martha Stewart show. Now, she did not care for it. Martha did not care for it, but I love dreamsicle, and the girl is the food editor for the New York Times. I have followed her on different occasions, you know, look at her stuff on the New York Times. She's got a new cookbook out with it's like an archive of the best recipes that the New York Times has featured over 150 years of its publishing history. So I definitely have that on my Christmas list this year. But these are two recipes that are from that. And the other one she had looked great. I usually keep parsnips in the bottom of my pan for roasting when I'm doing the turkey, and I make that into the gravy. this year, instead of having mashed potatoes, a vegetable that's very high in starch, and you have to kind of watch it in moderation. But Thanksgiving is that holiday where you can splurge. But again, we're all trying to watch our weight. Why not cook a vegetable that's similar in consistency, but less in the starch and, you know, just as nutritious? And it's the parsnip. And what she did was she did a Parmesan parsnip, and it had a lot of butter. And so I'm probably sure what you're missing on the potato and the starch, you're probably gaining in the butter. But then again, mashed potatoes have a ton of butter in it. Sometimes they have cream cheese, sometimes heavy cream. And this doesn't quite have all that. It does have whole milk and a lot of butter. But again, you're not really getting all those calories that you're getting on the potato. And you're also not getting, you're just getting all that butter and cream in your mashed potatoes as well. So I'm going to go with the parsnip version this year. And it has, you know, it sort of has the consistency of mashed potatoes. And it's Parmesan inside and pepper. And it looked so good. And some Madeira wine. She said that was a secret ingredient. And then, again, on top, you put some breadcrumbs. And you bake in the oven, sort of like a casserole. So these are two quick, easy sides, which gives me time to focus on my boneless turkey that I'm doing this year. Now, you can buy a boneless turkey. You can, if you have a good quality butcher, you can get them to debone the turkey for you and take out all the tedious tendons that aren't such a joy to bite into. So make sure they are removed. Even if you do take them to your butcher, double check their work. Check the quality of their work. If they did a crappy job of, you know, deboning your chicken, it's time to find a new butcher. But a lot now, even the supermarkets, you know, these boneless turkeys are all the rage, it seems to be. And what a lot of people do now is they go out and they buy the frozen turkey breast that's boneless already, and they let it thaw out, and they stuff it with their stuffing, and they roll it and tie it with butcher's twine and bake it in the oven. I'm sorry, roast it in the oven. Same thing. But anyway, it's you do that, and it, you out and out, you just slice it like you would slice a roulade, or you would slice a pumpkin roll perhaps, or whatever is your favorite, you know, sort of jelly roll even. It has that look to it where it's, you know, it's been rolled and it slices very nicely. And in the bottom of that pan, you can put some Brussels sprouts and, of course, score the bottom of them with X's so they cook nicely. And it soaks up all those delicious pan juices and gives it that additional flavor. So your Brussels sprouts don't need butter. They don't need anything. They're getting the pan juices that have been put in the bottom of your pan by that turkey that's been cooking. So this is going to be my social media Thanksgiving. We're going to have the parsnip casserole. We're going to have the sweet potato casserole for our dessert. We're going to have the gingerbread cheesecake this year. And we're going to have the boneless turkey with sausage and kale stuffing, as well as the Brussels sprouts that were pan roasted. A lot of these recipes, I always go to MarthaStewart.com because I've tried recipes from other places. I'm not going to name names. I'm just not as satisfied. The recipes are easy to read. If you're a beginner cook to an advanced cook, you can appreciate the quality of these recipes. So that's why I always stick with them. They're always great. Now, you guys have given me such great ideas for the holidays and some of your favorite side dishes and desserts. And I love hearing from all of my followers and listeners. And the big winner, which was interesting to see. I would love to actually like read national polls. Let's just see what is the most popular Thanksgiving dessert. A lot of you guys said pumpkin for your desserts, the pumpkin cheesecake. I got one of them, pumpkin pie. That seems to be a staple. So that's why, you know, and I talked about it's a traditional meal and you can't really skip out on those. That is something that I think needs to be on the table. Now you can do it decorative. You can flavor it instead of adding so much sugar. You can add some maple syrup instead. Kind of does a maple pumpkin pie. And what my favorite thing is to do is I make my homemade crust. I always do a homemade pie crust. I use all cold ingredients. I've talked about this before in the Baking Tips episode, which is still on iTunes, so download it if you haven't already. But it's make it cold, bake it hot. And I live by that, basically, when it comes to any kind of pastry dough whatsoever. And on the first, because if you make a big batch of the pie crust, it makes enough for two 9-inch pies. So you roll out the one to about an eighth of an inch thickness and you do a basic edge on it. And then you can pre-bake it, freeze it, you know, chill it, pre-bake it, bring it out of the oven, let it come to room temperature, fill your pie with the pie crust. Now on the other, fill your pie with the pie filling, I'm sorry. Now with the other pie crust, roll that out to the same thickness, the eighth of an inch thickness, and take a decorative color. You can use at the craft supply store, the baking supply store. If you're in Michael's, it's in the cake decorating aisle. If you're in the baking supply store, you can find it probably in the same aisle there too. The little aspic cutters or the little cookie cutters or fondant cutters that use the their decorative designs. You can find them in hearts and snowflakes, and now they have one out. I saw it the other week for autumn leaves. They had a maple leaf, an oak leaf. So I use little maple leaves, the smallest aspic cutter I can find. And it's about 3/4 of an inch in diameter. So I use that and I cut a little maple leaves with that. Now I use an egg wash to affix the pastry to the pie crust. And of course, then you bake that in the oven. Now, here's a little baker's tip. If you are, if your pumpkin pie gets a crack in it, this sometimes happens, you can cover it up with some pre-baked, little leaves that I was telling you about. Maybe you can make your pie look like leaves have fallen on top. Even one of my friends took some of his pie had so many cracks and he said it looked like somebody took a fork to it. And, but he took some Heath bar, the Heath toppings that you get in the packages, and he sprinkled them on top, and then he took some of the pie crust, pre-baked that, just in some pieces, crumbled it up and put that on top, and baked that. And he said it was different, it was well-received, though, and everybody loved it, because Heath Bar is his favorite candy. So he did that. I've never tried that, but it was something to keep in mind. I thought, well, if I ever disaster strikes, and God forbid it doesn't, I'm definitely going to try that. For your cheesecake, some people love the pumpkin cheesecake, and that is really good. Now, this year I said I was going to try the gingerbread cheesecake. Some people's cheesecakes, and it doesn't affect the taste, but they do get a crack in the middle, and there's a couple reasons for that. So I kind of wanted to basically talk, sort of give you another baking tip on how to prevent that from happening. Again, I haven't made an abundance of cheesecakes, but every cheesecake I've ever made, it's never had a crack in it. And I think it's because I followed the recipe to a T, and some people that do, you know, they still have cracks in them. But when I talked about people who've had cracks in their cheesecake, I asked them, I said, what did you do that was different than what I did? And I coat my springform pan in aluminum foil, and then I stick it in a roasting pan that is halfway full up to the sides of my springform pan with water. And that's something that a lot of people haven't done. And what this does is this prevents the pie itself from getting too hot and cracking. You also might need to check the temperature of your oven. I talked the other week about calibration. Very important to talk about the calibration of your oven. You can go to an appliance store and get an oven thermometer, and you can just basically set your oven to 400 degrees. Keep after your oven's been preheated to 400 degrees and then registers 400 degrees, check your temperature. If it's 50 to 100 degrees off or even 25 degrees off, it can really make the oven too hot or too cold for your items to be overcooked or undercooked. And that's a big problem, but it's not to worry. It's not too expensive to either, get the appliance man out there and get him to fix it for you. Or you can just readjust the settings as needed. But know that it is an issue. If your oven is 25 degrees hotter than what it says, then set your oven 25 degrees lower than what you need. Keep the temperature gauge in there and make sure that it still is the temperature that you estimate it's going to be. So if you have your oven set to 400 and it's registering 425, set it to 375 if you need it for 400. If the register on the oven says it's 375 and the temperature inside is 400, then you're okay. You're good to go. If it's still at 375, then your oven is a little bit off and you might need to get the appliance man out there ASAP. And it's better to do this sooner than later. So I would do this right away. But some ovens already have a temperature gauge built in, so don't go out and spend $10 to $15 on an oven temperature thermometer. I would check the inside thermometer first. And if you have one, good for you. You have a good oven that's well spent. I'll make sure that registers correctly as well. For side dishes, now with the polls with this that I did, I got so many different responses. I got stuffing, I got deviled eggs, even a lobster macaroni and cheese, and that's different, but again, you can see that so many of these side dishes must come from family tradition. Somebody must make the best deviled eggs. Somebody craves their aunt's stuffing once a year. And somebody's mom probably made the best lobster macaroni and cheese that they've ever had before. So again, these sort of are passed down traditions. You know, lobster macaroni and cheese, not such a common side dish to have on the Thanksgiving table. Deviled eggs, a common hors d'oeuvre, but yet, again, not really associated too much with Thanksgiving dinners, but they seem to be at every Thanksgiving that we know of. And, yeah, these are just, it's wonderful side dishes. And side dishes, you can just, I mean, whip up from nothing and create a wonderful casserole. My great-grandmother made the best oyster cracker stuffing. And was with like saltine crackers and like cream of mushroom soup from the can. But it's like something that you crave every year. It's like my mom, when I was growing up, she made the best macaroni and cheese. Now, let me tell you how she made the best macaroni and cheese. Kraft macaroni and cheese from the box. But I crave it. And when I see like the baked macaroni and cheese, which I happen to love, but for me, it became an acquired taste because I wasn't raised on that. So I was like, oh, this isn't like my mom's. But then I tried it and I was like, I just can't, I don't think I can get used to it. But then over time, and as my obsession with the taste of cheese grew, I found myself craving Gruyere, topped macaroni and cheese with Gruyere and Fontina cheeses. And that's my favorite macaroni and cheese now, but now it's hard for me to get me back on the box kind. But yeah, again, it's sort of like, you know, side dishes are just one of those popular things. So, but it's also easier to get away sometimes with a side dish that's different. You know, when you have 8 different side dishes on your Thanksgiving table, or, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6, say sometimes 8 or 10, it's easy to introduce a new one because somebody will say, hey, what was that thing you made last year at Thanksgiving? Bring that again. That was really good. That's how you get new things completed. A common thing that I seem to find at my family's Thanksgivings is they'll look in the paper, like the local newspaper, and they'll find something that looked really good. And it's usually horribly fattening and very ultra processed, but it's okay. I do like it. I'm not going to lie. It's, this is really good. What is it? Because it's different. You know, it's not always the common pasta shells with Velveeta cheese. It's not always the common, stuffing that's there that, you know, is just, and it's not the box gravy. It's always something else. It's variety. And when you bring variety to the table, that's how eventually change will come about. So if you, I suggest you do that with your side dishes and desserts this year. Bring something new to the table. Try it out first. But bring something new to the table. I guarantee you, if it's really good and your family appreciates it, your extended family is going to appreciate it as well. The one thing I would not mix up is the turkey. If you're going to do a boneless turkey that's been rolled and stuffed with the sausage and kale stuffing, like I said, or another stuffing of your choice, again, you want to try that beforehand and maybe make an additional batch, and maybe not such a big batch, but a small batch, and serve that to your guests. Your family might love it. You can talk to them maybe about what would you maybe perhaps having this next year versus the turkey. Because sometimes, you know, turkey can be a challenge. I just did the Turkey 101 podcast about that the other day, but it really is, it's still intimidating. It can take 2 or 3 turkeys sometimes to make sure that you got it down pat. This will be my 6th or 7th turkey that I've done. And to me, it's like second nature because it's always the one way I do it. But there is now, I do different turkeys. You know, that's why I do the 2 Thanksgivings. So this year I'm doing the boneless roulade turkey. And I'm really excited about that. Stuffing, again, something that's sort of hard to sell with people. Some people crave the boxed stuffing. That's crazy. You could do a PSA about MSG and how horrible it is for your body. But and then just show them a box of the homemade stuffing and be like, I made this for you. And they dig right in. It wouldn't even faze them at all. Now, me, you can't sell me on boxed stuffing. I crave homemade stuffing. And my mom, her stuffing is really, she adds a lot of eggs to it. And I find myself eating stuffing. I'm like, Mom, like, mine's not as wet as yours is. What do you do? And she's like, oh, you got to add more eggs. So I know. And it's so cohesive and binding. And I love it. It's almost, some people get annoyed when their stuffing is too cohesive and almost like binding, you know, where it's stuck together, kind of glue, you know, like almost mashed potatoes can sometimes be gluey. again, that's something that, you know, it's hard to sell on people, but make the traditional stuffing that's always available at your Thanksgiving. And then make an additional stuffing and try to sell it. Sell it like you would be a salesperson. Say, oh my gosh, you have to try that dried cherry and Sasha's stuffing that I made this year. It's out of this world. Tell them that. They'll get a little scoop. They'll try it. And they'll either agree or disagree. But one, I mean, it's your way of getting that new dish out there. Hey, you never know. It could be the main center of attraction on this year's Thanksgiving table. It might not, but at least now you'll know. So these are ways I introduce new side dishes and desserts to the Thanksgiving table. I hope you take some of these great ideas and apply them to this year's Thanksgiving, next year's Thanksgiving, and every holiday celebration there is to come. I hope you enjoyed the podcast, and we'll be back next Friday, which is Black Friday. I'm so excited. I want to know who's going out Black Friday shopping and going to be going to the, for the deal busters. Some of you who are working in retail right now are probably cussing at me. I'm sorry. I will be one of those freaks out there at 2 a.m. With my old lawn chair that's ready to be disposed of and an old blanket that I don't care if anybody takes. And I'll leave it right there in line and I'll run into the store just like a mad person, get what I need and go. And if my chair and blanket are still there, I'll come back and get them. If not, who cares? But next week, we're talking all about Christmas cookies. One of my favorite things to do, and often a tradition that I do on Thanksgiving weekend with my mom. And I cannot wait. This year, we're going to have so much fun doing that. And the following week, this is even more exciting, I am going to be attending the Martha Stewart Crafts holiday sale up at her offices in New York City. So I'm going to try to, that's the one that Saturday, which is December 4th. I will be posting a podcast that Saturday, December 3rd, and it will be talking about all about holiday Christmas crafts. However, I will be taking my iPod with me. I'll be trying to do some interviews with, or my iPhone with me, I'm sorry. I will be trying to do some interviews with some of the staff there that is responsible for organizing the event. And we'll see if we can get that up and on here, if they allow me. And I hope they do. And that'll be the following week's episode. Who knows if I have good, I mean, there's so much to talk about during the holiday season. But I just don't have the time to do 3 or 4 podcasts a week. So I'm sorry about that, but I am having so much fun doing this. And thank you again, guys, for the positive response. I hope all of you have a very happy Thanksgiving, and I wish you all the very best holiday season for 2010. I'll see you next week on our podcast talking all about Christmas cookies, Black Friday 2010.